got stuck, because if not, this guy would have had a real problem if he had no coverage out there or no cell phone with him. But the cell phone definitely saved this guy. They were able to, you know, call the troops, come in there with ladders, walk across this thing and get this guy out. So the cell phone saved this guy. It's just, I guess stories like this, I guess they should be made more public if possible. Maybe make some of these people realize that cell phones and towers are for the benefit, not the hindrance of people's lives.
Well done. What paper or what news report did you get that from, Joe? Go ahead.
This happened about maybe Tuesday, I think, of this week. It was on WCBS-TV.
Okay, if we go to the past news reports for approximately Tuesday of last week, we'll find it. Thank you. Bye-bye for now.
Comment.
Go ahead, comment.
The Yankees have just won. They're going to the World Series, N2RDB, for anyone who's interested.
Well done, Tim. I bet you're a Yankee fan.
Actually, I'm a Mets fan, but somebody from New York has got to do it, you know?
They sure do. Looks like New York's going to be represented.
Definitely. N2RDB. Out. Good night.
Reflector 9126, link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the New England Reflector 912.
Channel 6.
Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Good morning.
You guys have anything to say? It's getting really annoying. K3K.
EchoLink N2STU.
WQVL repeater. WQVL repeater system. Good morning. Time is 1 a.m. 73, and good night from the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the WQVL repeater. The time is 1:11 a.m. This is the WQVL repeater. WQVL repeater system. Good morning. The time is 1:21 a.m. The time is 1:23 a.m. 73. And good night from the WQVL repeater.
Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1678. With a release date of Friday, October 9th, 2009, to follow in 5, 4, 3. This is Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1680, with a release date of Friday, October 23rd, 2009, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The Federal Communications Commission issues a public notice on ham radio operators being paid by entities holding emergency training drills as the ARRL plans a web seminar. Also, South Africa's Sumbandilisat comes on the air, the IARU Administrative Council meets down under, and a truly rare one for SWLs. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1680, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Ohio, here is Fred Bobby, W8HDU.
The Federal Communications Commission appears to be offering a kind of limited legal olive branch to government entities in need of ham radio operators to perform emergency communications during drills. This, while the ham is on the clock, for an employer who might be sponsoring or involved in an event. Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Carlson, KQ6FM, takes a look at what the FCC has to say.
In its October 20th public notice, the FCC begins by reiterating that transmissions by amateur stations participating in government disaster drills must comply with all applicable amateur service rules. It agrees that the value of the amateur service to the public is that of a voluntary, non-commercial communication service, particularly with respect to providing emergency communications, is one of the underlying principles of the amateur service. At the same time, the agency is adamant that the amateur service is not an emergency radio service unto itself. Rather, says the regulatory agency, ham radio is a voluntary, non-commercial communication service. It is authorized for the purpose of self-training, intercommunication, and technical investigations. This is carried out by licensed persons interested in radio technique solely with a personal aim and without pecuniary interest. In other words, nobody involved with the use of ham radio on the air can directly or indirectly profit from it. The FCC then goes on to say that state and local government public safety agencies occasionally conduct emergency preparedness or disaster drills that include amateur operations. Some entities, such as hospitals, emergency operation centers, and police, fire, and emergency medical service stations, have expressed interest in having their employees, who are amateur station operators, participate in these drills by transmitting messages on the entity's behalf. The Commission's rules, however, specifically prohibit amateur stations from transmitting communications in which the station licensee or control operator has a pecuniary interest, including communications on behalf of an employer. But here is where that olive branch sort of comes in. The FCC release goes on to say that given the public interest in facilitating government-sponsored emergency preparedness and disaster drills, that the FCC will take this opportunity to provide a clear process for requesting a waiver and provide the information that it required in order for it to consider granting such a request. And this is what the FCC says has to be done. First, you, the ham radio operator, cannot request the waiver. Only the government agency or entity that you work for can do that. In other words, waiver requests should be submitted to the Wireless Telecommunications Bureau by the government entity conducting the drill and must provide the following information. First, when and where the drill takes place. Second, the identification of the amateur licensees expected to transmit amateur communications on behalf of their employees. Third is the identification of the employers on whose behalf the hams will be transmitting, and lastly, a brief description of the drill. The FCC emphasizes that the filing of a waiver request does not excuse compliance with the rules while that request is pending, rather that the waiver must be requested prior to the drill, and employees may not transmit amateur communications on their employer's behalf unless the waiver request has been granted. So what does this mean for Joe Ham, whose employer wants him to take part in an emergency drill? If we interpret this correctly, if the employer is part of a city, state, or federal agency, and if the FCC feels that the drill is important enough to issue the waiver, then those hams can take part, but only after the waiver has been issued and only during the time period that its grant is in force. On the other hand, if Joe Ham works for some commercial organization that is not eligible to obtain a waiver, then it's best to say no rather than put his license on the line. Lastly, the FCC notes that in an actual emergency, the Commission's rules provide that an amateur station may use any means of radio communication at its disposal to provide essential communication needs in connection with the immediate safety of human life and the immediate protection of property when normal communication systems are not available. In those circumstances, says the FCC, a rule waiver is not necessary. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Don Carlson, KQ6FM in Reno.
The Federal Communications Commission release says that for further information regarding matters discussed in this public notice, to contact William T. Cross of the Wireless Telecommunications Bureau. The best way is by email to william.cross@fcc.gov. You can download and read the entire notice on the URL found in this week's printed Amateur Radio Newsline report. Meanwhile, ARRL General Counsel Christopher D. Imlay, W3KD, and ARRL Regulatory Information Manager Dan Henderson, N1ND, will present a web-based conference. This to discuss the issues behind and the reasoning for the League's recent report titled, The Commercialization of Amateur Radio, The Rules, The Risks. That's the ARRL's position paper as a interest that it relates to the United States Amateur Radio Service. The session will take place on Wednesday, October the 28th, beginning at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. According to the ARRL Atlantic Division Director Bill Edgar, N3LLR, who is the session sponsor, all amateurs need to be aware of these issues. The online gathering is available at no cost and is open to all amateurs. To register for this interactive web-based meeting, go to the URL found in this week's printed Amateur Radio Newsline report. The first contacts have been made using the newly launched South African Sumbanilisat ham radio payload, and it sounded like this. According to the official mission blog, at 0748 UTC during the first morning pass on Sunday, October the 18th, controllers activated the voice beacon on 435.350 MHz. Then they switched on the transponder with an uplink that is on 145.88 MHz, with a downlink on 435.350 MHz. Later in the day, during the first evening pass at 1813 UTC, several radio amateurs were heard operating through the satellite transponder. Thankfully, controllers had the foresight to preserve the moment for posterity. It was a moment of triumph for everyone who worked for years to design, build, and launch Sumban Ilisat. You can hear more of these initial QSOs through this new South African ham radio satellite at the URL found in this week's printed amateur radio newsline. A ham involved in a rescue mission is on his way to help earthquake ravage Sumatra and is on the air via ham radio satellites. Jim Clary, ND9M, who also holds the call VQ9JC, is presently deployed on a Navy ship heading for Sumatra and on a humanitarian mission to deliver fresh water for the victims of the recent earthquakes there. While en route, he's been active on ham radio satellites using a Yaesu FT-897 as a transmitter and an FT-817 for a receiver. He's using a battery from an uninterruptible power supply, or UPS, to power the station operated from the helicopter pad aboard the ship. Clary says there isn't much activity in the Indian Ocean, but he's working VUs and E-21s and handing out very rare water grids while he's whiling away the time until the ship reaches Sumatra. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Twin City Amateur Radio Club Net, serving Champaign and Urbana, Illinois.
I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, with the sad news that the C6 APR contest team has been killed in an aviation accident that took place on their way to the Bahamas to operate the CQ Worldwide TX contest. Peter Ratting, W2GJ, Ed Stabile, K3ISD, Randy Hartenrader, K4QO, and Dallas Carter, W3PP, lost their lives the morning of Wednesday, October 21st. This when the twin-engine Piper Aztec that they were traveling on crashed shortly after takeoff from Somerville Airport in rural South Carolina. Their operators were on their way to Crooked Island in the Bahamas for the annual operating event. The cause of the crash is under investigation. We'll have more on this tragic story for you next week. Fred?
The Administrative Council of the International Amateur Radio Union held its annual meeting in Christchurch, New Zealand on October 17th and 18th. Numerous points were agreed upon. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, takes a look at a few of them.
We won't go into the minute details, but among the most important items was a review of a strategic plan for the development of support for amateur radio frequency allocations for the period through 2012. The principal focus is on preparations for the 2012 World Radio Communication Conference, with an eye at getting a new amateur allocation in the vicinity of 500 kHz. Another important point was adoption of a policy statement explaining the status of the Global Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Conference, or GAREC, this with respect to the International Amateur Radio Union. According to the meeting report, the Global Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Conference functions as an informal meeting of IARU member societies and of amateur radio emergency groups within or outside of the respective national IARU member society. The gathering serves as a forum for the exchange of experience and as an advisory body for the emergency communications work of the IARU. And still in the area of emergency communications, the Administrative Council noted that the three IARU regions have reached consensus on three global center of activity frequencies for use in the event of emergencies. These frequencies are 14.300, 18.160, and 21.360 megahertz. Lastly, but by no means least, the theme of amateur radio, combining communication experience with modern digital techniques, has been selected for the next World Amateur Radio Day. And that's slated for April 18th, 2010. In Auckland, New Zealand, I'm Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF, reporting for the Amateur Radio Newsline.
The next scheduled in-person meeting of the International Amateur Radio Union Administrative Council will be held in El Salvador in conjunction with the IARU Region 2 Conference. That takes place October 2010. If something sounds strange on 20 meters SSB, where there should be only Morse code, then you have likely stumbled across what appears to be an African pirate radio net. According to Region 1 Intruder Watch, this group is likely unlicensed operators that can be found every morning from 0600 to 0900 UTC on 14.002.2 megahertz using upper sideband. They converse in what can be described as an unknown tribal language. They operate like a phone line. Beam headings taken from Germany place the operation at about 180 degrees and possibly putting the operation in Central Africa or Angola. No calls have been heard. Ham radio will be a part of the 2010 Olympics. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has more.
The upcoming Olympic Games in Canada will be celebrated on the ham bands. This with word that members of the Vancouver Olympics Amateur Radio Group will be activating three special event stations to promote and commemorate the Vancouver Winter Olympic and Paralympic Games to be held in February and March of 2010. The special activity is already underway and will continue through March 2010. Operations will be on all bands and modes, with the first station, DG7B, on the air from October 1st through November 30th. Then comes DG7W from December 1st of this year through January 31st of 2010. The final call will be VG7G, taking to the airwaves on February 1st and continuing through March 31st of 2010. The Vancouver Olympics Amateur Radio Group says that it will be consolidating all contacts and intends to post them electronically to the ARRL's logbook to the world. In addition, commemorative paper QSL cards for those who want them will be available at the conclusion of the events in April 2010. Cards received via the QSL Bureau will be returned the same way. In the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
In addition to the commemorative operation, radio amateurs will also be handling many of the logistics for the games. Word is that most of this will be short-range communications on the 1.3 meter or 220 megahertz band using FM and numerous local repeaters. Hams who use international reply coupons or IRCs in the QSL exchange process are advised to check the expiration dates of the current stock. This is because one batch is due to expire on December the 31st. Those are the ones that you need to use up quickly before their value is gone. Turning to enforcement news, word that 50 state broadcast associations have signed onto a letter of protest to the Federal Communications Commission about a proposed $5,000 fine against KWVE-FM of San Clemente, California. This for an EAS mistake by a station staffer. As reported here on Newsline a few weeks ago, the case goes back about a year. That's when Calvary Chapel Station, KWVE, transmitted an unauthorized required monthly test of the emergency alert system. The Federal Communications Commission received a complaint in October of 2008 that the station transmitted commercial programming and an ad as part of the test message, which was then retransmitted by other stations and cable systems in the Daisy chain. Their response to a letter of inquiry, the station told the commission that one of its employees had intended to run a scheduled weekly EAS test, but ran the unscheduled RMT instead. Also, that the employee failed to transmit the end-of-message code. But in its decision last month, the FCC said KWVE's actions affected other stations. Also, the transmission of EAS tones that are followed by a broadcast that is not part of an EAS test or actual emergency information, whether intentional or accidental, compromises the integrity of the EAS system. The Federal Communications Commission called KWVE's action willful, and that's why they proposed a $5,000 fine. Now, in their letter protesting the Federal Communications Commission's action against KWVE, the Broadcasters Associations remind the commission that the station is a volunteer, local primary LP1. As such, they are concerned that if the commission imposes a substantial fine against an LP1 for a mistake, it would then deter current LP1s, as well as current primary entry point stations, from continuing to participate voluntarily in the EAS. The broadcast associations also fear the fine would also have a chilling effect, preventing new stations from serving as LP1s or primary entry point stations. The association signed the letter representing radio and television stations in all 50 states, as well as the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. In the letter, they asked the agency either to set aside the fine or simply admonish the station. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio News Line with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. And talk about a novel defense to an FCC accusation of a major broadcast violation. It looks as if CBS might just have come up with one, as we hear from Newsline's Jim Davis, W2JKD.
CBS Incorporated says that the FCC is violating its constitutional rights in hounding the broadcaster in regards to what's become known as the Super Bowl Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction. In a Friday filing, October the 2nd, before the U.S. Third Circuit Court of Appeals, CBS said that the FCC has an Ahab-like obsession with the Super Bowl case, comparing the commission to the mad sea captain in Moby Dick. CBS lawyers say that this obsession poses an important question. They ask, how many years can the FCC prolong a broadcast indecency probe of an unscripted and unintended event that lasted 9/16 of 1 second? CBS says the FCC's obsessive zeal in pursuing the Super Bowl case and the attendant chill on broadcast speech show why First Amendment activity by the court may not be just appropriate but also necessary. The network also contends in a filing that the notorious wardrobe malfunction was orchestrated by Jackson and duet partner Justin Timberlake without the network's knowledge.
As previously reported in September, the Federal Communications Commission asked the court to look into whether CBS was reckless when it chose not to use video delay technology for the broadcast. The agency contends that even the fleeting exposure of an entertainer's breast that was broadcast over the airwaves violated FCC indecency regulations. A new internet-based reflector group has been created to discuss the use of D-Star digital voice and high-speed data on the 1.2 gigahertz band. Called D-Star_23CM, the group discussions center around the use of the ICOM ID-1 mobile, IC9100 transceiver, RP-1V, and RP-2V digital voice repeaters, and all aspects of 23-centimeter data and voice communications using D-Star technology. The group can be joined at yahoo.com/D-Star_23CM. Flexible antennas attached to your clothing may work better for GPS or other personal satellite communications reception. That, according to the European Space Agency, as reported by TV Technologies' Doug Lund. Firefighters or other emergency personnel may benefit from this technology, according to officials involved
Net
in
tonight
this
at
testing.
8:30. Welcome to
turning to Ham Radio Space Relay News. There's a possibility that Iran's Mesbah 2 satellite, slated for launch early 2010, could operate on frequencies allocated to the amateur satellite service. An online report at astronomics.com says that the original Mesbah satellite, lost in a 2005 launch failure, was to have operated on amateur satellite service frequencies. Now, it's being reported that Iran's Minister of Communications and Information Technology, Reza Takapour, has said that the replacement Mesbah satellite has successfully completed pre-launch tests and is now ready for liftoff early next year. Most observers think that there will be little difference between the transponder setup between the lost Mesbah satellite and the new replacement bird. The Wireless Institute of Australia National News Service is now on Twitter. As many of you know, the WIA is the National Society for Radio Amateurs in Australia. It joins the growing number of ham radio organizations making use of this service. You can find WIA National News on Twitter at twitter.com/VK1WIA. Also remember that Amateur Radio Newsline has created a news discussion page on the Facebook social networking service. You must be a Facebook member to access it. Just go to www.facebook.com. Join the service. Use the search feature to find Amateur Radio Newsline's page and then become a friend of it. We hope to see you there. The historic Alexander alternating transmitter located in Grimton, Sweden will take to the airwaves on October 24th at 0900 UTC and again on December the 24th at 0800 UTC. The museum station is operated by volunteers on special days throughout the year. It transmits CW on the frequency of 17.2 kilohertz, signing the call SAQ. If nothing else, the station is well worth listening out for because its CW is a musical sound and is rather unique. No reports required and no QSL cards are given for the October transmission, but QSLs are available for the Christmas Eve transmission. For more information, just point your browser to www.alexander.n.se. In DX, word is that the ARRL's DXCC desk has approved the recent FT5GA's operation from Glorioso Island and has been approved for DXCC credit. Their operation that began on September the 14th and ran through October the 8th netted more than 50,000 QSOs. Until this operation, Glorioso was number 4 on the DX magazine's most wanted list. DL2FAG will be active from Niue and Samoa from October the 19th to November the 7th. He will operate as ZK2DL from Niue and from the 17th to the 30th of November from Samoa. He plans to operate mainly RTTY, PSK, and SSB on 10 through 80, QSL via his home call. A German team is on the air for their 26th DX position to Liechtenstein, where they're operating as HB0/HB9AON from Triesenberg. They'll be there through October the 30th and are active on the band. The QSL manager is DJ2YE. And lastly, G7COD will be operating from Embidou Island and the Maldives until October the 25th. He's using the call 8Q7AK on SSB and CW on the 80 through 10 meter band, including WARC frequencies. QSL as directed on the air. And finally this week, if you'd like to listen out for a very rare shortwave station, then this one is for you. Once again, here's Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Radio St. Helena Day 2009 will be on Saturday, the 14th of November. This rare station is located on the island of St. Helena, which lies in the South Atlantic off the coast of Angola. The station normally provides a local radio service to the island and has a range of about 100 kilometers, but once a year, it broadcasts internationally on shortwave at 11.0925 megahertz on upper sideband with its famed Party on the Air program. This year's operation will begin at 2000 UTC and conclude at 0100 UTC, with the last 90 minutes beaming towards North America, Central America, and the Caribbean. A special QSL card will be available to confirm reception reports. To get a QSL from Radio St. Helena, you must send a written and verifiable reception report by airmail and include sufficient return postage to Radio St. Helena, Post Office Box 93, Jamestown, St. Helena, STHLIZZ, South Atlantic Ocean. Mark your envelope via airmail, via United Kingdom, and Ascension. For those not aware, St. Helena was named after St. Helena of Constantinople. I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Unless we not forget, email reports will not be verified and off-air recordings cannot be returned. At least that's what the press release says. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicators, CQ Magazine, the Federal Communications Commission, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, and Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Fred Volbe, W8HDU, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2009. All rights reserved.
Reflector 9126. Link clear.
Welcome to the New England Reflector 912.
Channel 6. You are currently connected to node number 9126.
I DeLaw Token Act enabled.
Net tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. WQVL repeater system. Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the WQVL repeater.
K2UPS, V2HTP.
The time is 5:10 a.m. This is the WQVL repeater.
K2UPS, W2HTV.
WQVL repeater system, good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the WQVL repeater.
W2HCP Paul.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning.
N2ZEP Mobile.
Wow, you're early. W2HCB, just out of the tunnel.
And you are complaining that I actually got out early?
I am shocked that you were on this early.
Monday, Thursday, and alternate Fridays, I get an earlier start than I used to. I'm about maybe 5 minutes ahead of schedule. I didn't take as long a shower this morning.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I'm 37 to the left. Crawl on. She's climbing the hill here. Gotta go up to the Puerto Rico for summer Delta Schwinning.
G2B.
Charles recognized, and I couldn't make out where you were going. Charles, pick it up.
The short shower today, does that mean we get to call you Doc Stinky today? Johnny?
Yeah, Dr. Stinky today, short shower. He missed the armpit. all right, I'm going to be going down and up and down and up, so I'll get back in when I got a good signal and I can hear you guys really good. W2HCP, 37th Street, going uphill.
Okay, guys, have your fun. Actually, what usually happens, depending upon how my back feels, I steam it in the shower. And I woke up this morning, the back felt pretty decent, so I didn't have to stand there with the hot water beating on my back for a long period of time. The armpits were taken care of. Charles?
I know the steam the back routine very well, and then also steam the leg. Isn't getting old miserable?
It beats the alternative. You know, I used to kid around about it, getting to the point where I'm actually starting to consider doing it every morning, put my hands to the left, hands to the right, hands in front of me, and if I don't feel wood, open up my eyes.
Sometimes I wonder about, you know, whether it's better than the alternative. That's on the really bad days when it really hurts. The beginning of this year, I came pretty darn close to the alternative, and talk about pain. Ugh, no fun. Gary?
Yeah, I hate talking about it because for the last few years, my back has been feeling good. And I think it's because I'm treating another ailment. I have obstructive sleep apnea, and I sleep with a CPAP on. And as a result, I can no longer sleep on my stomach, and now I don't wake up with my back totally killing me. You know, I have my normal aches and pains, but at my age, you don't expect to get away scot-free.
This med is set to 10 centimeters, Swift 2 mask. Been there, know that. I don't know if you know what happened at the beginning of the year. I came down with a bad case of acute pancreatitis. 14 days in LIJ in the North Shore.
Well, that's almost as good as what a friend of mine is almost recovered from. He went to his physician, and I believe he's got some osteoporosis, and he had had a reaction to one of the bisphosphonates before, and they said, oh no, this one you won't have a reaction to, and I forget which brand name it was. It was the IV infusion type, and within 5 hours he was running 103 fever, and this fever was coming on and off for a month.
Joy. Back in September I started getting, you know, these abdominal pains, and I was waking up and my pillow was sweaty every night, and, I'm working too long, it's stress, it's whatever, I ignored it until January 4th, I couldn't ignore it anymore. And it turns out I had a badly infected pancreas. It was fun. 14 days in the doc shop, and plus they discovered I had become a diabetic because of it. Yeah, it was lots of fun. And then after the 14 days in the doc shop, it was the remainder of 3 months at home. Gary, KG2B.
Well, he spent a couple of weeks in the hospital, I don't remember how long, because they couldn't believe that this was a reaction to the medication, so they checked him out for every known infectious disease that there was. He came up clean, so they said it's got to be a reaction to the medication, and they still can't believe it because there's no known case that lasted that long. So he's in the medical journals, I'll bet. He's going to be written up. I'll guarantee it. Not the way you want to be written up.
Nope. And I was an interesting case that got presented on Grand Rounds a few times because evidently acute pancreatitis, when it's not caused by a gallbladder like Bob's, and when it's not caused by alcoholism, it turns out to be extremely rare. So, you know, they kept coming around and saying, look! And they believe it was secondary to hypertriglyceridemia, which is now under control, thank goodness. Gary?
Charles admitted you've been hitting the bottle. You just don't want to admit it. You're a closet drinker.
Yeah, I actually had one this week, which is one more than I usually have. I usually have a couple a year. I was bringing home... Dad enjoyed a good cognac at the end of the day, and I'm emptying his house out. I decided to have a glass, raise the glass towards that, to Dad, you know? It was quite pleasant. Gary?
Cognac is not my cup of tea. If I'm going to have an alcoholic beverage, I usually prefer scotch. Although, occasionally I will go towards Southern Comfort.
My usual typical is Glenmorangie Portwood aged. Like I said, I was bringing home bad stuff, and I decided to raise a glass towards him.
Yeah, I've become, over the years, my taste for scotch has developed to the point where I am a little bit of a scotch snob. You know, the average bar scotch is not worth my drinking. I have to get at least up to what the average bar considers top shelf liquor before I'll consider it.
Yeah, yeah. If you ever get in touch with W2IRT, ask him about scotch. He is a scotch snob, and I got to try some of his. Quite nice, some of them. It's funny. Dad had won a couple of bottles of blended scotches at a couple of events. I was with him when he won two of them, and I'm emptying it out. There's these still sealed boxes of Black Label and Pinch and the like, and I walked over to my neighbor, and who I know enjoys them, and I handed them to my neighbor. He enjoyed that, and it's like, no, I drink single malt, thank you. Gary Cage, you too.
See, now, you've mentioned two very good scotches, as far as I'm concerned. Although one I like, and one I could take a leave. I've tried the Hagen Hake Pinch. It's supposedly a very good scotch, but it's not my taste. Once you develop the taste for Johnny Walker Black Label, there aren't too many scotches with that taste. It's got a unique flavor, and I happen to like it.
Okay, like I said, I tend towards the single malts, Glenmorangie and the like. I like them. What can I tell you? I grew up sitting on Dad's knee, having the occasional glass of cognac, so that was, he had a oak bottle of, XO, Courvoisier XO, and, enjoyed some last night.
Well, don't kid yourself. If there's a good single malt scotch available, I will enjoy it at a party thrown for me by some of my students. I was handed McCallum, I think 12-year-old, and that was quite nice.
Oh, it was nice. Like I said, I buy the Glenmorangie if I prefer it. That's also a 12-year-old. I've had some other ones. There's one that, like I said, W2IRT gave me. It was given to him by his father-in-law. It was absolutely superb, with this thing, but the price is a tad out of reach. Let's put it this way, four figures for the bottle. Gary?
Now, the most expensive bottle that was ever put into my possession was a bottle, I still have it, of Johnny Walker Blue Label. I believe that sells for about $160 a bottle. But I was given it as a present. It's nice. But I don't need to spend $160 a bottle. I like my Black Label.
Had I but known you, I would have handed it to you. Like I said, I've gotten to taste, this stuff that's supposedly by, the Scotch snobs to be one of the better. It's interesting. I gather the distillery hasn't existed in, 20, 25, 30 years. It's whatever's left is left. It's one of those deals. Oh, approaching Maurice Avenue at the speed limit, KG2B.
That is one of the advantages of going in this early. You can drive the speed limit, or sometimes better, all the way in, except for that little tie-up that I always get right by the Grand Central LIE interchange.
the Queens Boulevard tie-up. It's actually caused by everybody getting on from the Van Wyck and off from like Queens Boulevard, Junction Boulevard there. That spot's been notorious for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, it starts tying up anywhere. Let's see, if you're on the LIE, it starts slowing down Casino Boulevard, Main Street area, and it doesn't open up until, and now I don't use exits as this landmark because I'm old enough to remember the Elmhurst gas tanks.
I was about to say the tanks. and actually when I said I was approaching Maurice Avenue and it was opening up and I'm back to the speed limit, I was going past the tanks.
Yeah, what are they doing on that property now? You know, for the longest time, it looked as if they were just doing a decontamination and then a landfill, and it looked like they were just going to grade it out and make it into a park. Now I see hills developing in there. What are they doing?
But it's not going to be flat, KG2V.
Hope they did a good job with the decontamination. It would be great to let our kids play in a contaminated zone.
Who knows? Who knows? Oh, coming up to the 100th point exit, going up the hill here.
Yeah, I'm on the Grand Central going over the CIP right now. Doing the speed limit plus.
That's good. Oh, had an Aries event here in Queens yesterday. It was a fun one. We could have used one more person than we had, but we lived. It's called the Totten Trot. It's a little 5K out in Fort Totten. Beautiful spot to spend a autumn afternoon.
I tell you, the weather out by me is the type of weather that yesterday that the marathoners next week are going to pray for. It was a beautiful day.
I was talking with a lot of the guys from New York Roadrunner and stuff like that. They were saying, oh, we hope we get something like this tomorrow, next Sunday. It was cool. It was crisp. It was dry. They really, what they didn't want, they said, but with less wind, be it there was a wicked wind blowing on the shore there.
When you're doing a 26-miler like they're going to be doing next week, you're going over enough terrain that the wind conditions are going to change no matter what.
W2VL repeater system.
Yeah, but we were getting, you know, it was like at one point there was probably a 25 mile an hour steady wind, and they say running into that, even when you get a tailwind later, just no fun. Listen, I'm going down the hill into the tunnel, so I'll talk at you later. 73, this is KG2V.
Okay, I got at least another 5 minutes before I get to the tunnel myself. I'm at Francis Lewis Boulevard, N2ZEP.
Hey, Carrie. N2ZEP.
Morning, John. Just starting out?
Yep. I heard you went over to Cross Island. Well, up to the Cross Islands should be good for me. Sure. Speed limit plus. And, let's see, I was, like, walking down Merrick, and I passed by the sign, and I was like, what? And guess whose house I was in front of? Well, on the side of, I should say.
NZUHD Mobile.
The back end of my house. And the back end, no, I'm not going to say it.
UHD, picking up.
Good morning, everyone. Beautiful day, start of a new week on the Cross Island. Anyone made the ham fest yesterday?
Not me. What about you, Gary?